Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on Ryer on YouTube. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined, of course, by Travis Ryer, the proprietor of said Ryer on YouTube, an exploding spot on that platform. Lots to get into here tonight as we preview that Alabama-Georgia game, big tilt number two versus number four. SEC opener for the Crimson Tide. Travis, not Georgia, of course. They've already taken on Kentucky, but huge game with some big implications. I wrote this week, the implications maybe are certainly not as big as they would have been in years past in a four-team playoff, Travis. Let's go ahead and start big picture, and then we'll get down to nuts and bolts personnel afterward, but yeah, big game for sure. Certainly a bragging rights game. Certainly important for both teams to win this game to keep an inside track on a potential SEC title. But with a 12-team playoff upon us, not a season crusher to lose it either.
You know, in years past when these teams would meet in the regular season, Chase, even in the four team, it wasn't necessarily a season ender. It would put more heat on you. I mean, because you had the divisions, right? It was still right. East and West, and it wasn't a divisional game, but there was still that possibility. If you lost that first one and there was a rematch in that second one, you definitely had to win the SEC championship game. But yeah, with the 12 team playoff, I've kind of looked at this Alabama schedule from 10,000 feet and thought between Georgia on the road at Tennessee, and previously, I thought this with LSU, too. Those three games, if Alabama goes even 1-2 through that stretch, still a strong possibility to make the college football playoff. I guess if you want to throw Mizzou in there as a home game next month, you could say 2-2 from those four games, and you're 10-2, and you're probably going to be in the college football playoff. Now, timing of losses, as we know, can still have something to do with all of that, too. Even with a 12-team format, but it doesn't pack the wallet, but it's still Georgia, Alabama with everything that these teams have accomplished over the last 8 or 10 years and the magnitude of the matchups between these teams. It has surpassed Alabama LSU, I think. And that's saying something because Alabama LSU, you know you're going to get every year. You don't know that with Alabama Georgia, but it still seems like just about every year we get these two teams in some form or fashion.
And they've run it, yeah, they've run into them enough in the SEC title game that you can make that case, you know, versus the Alabama LSU rivalry. No doubt, one loss in the 4-team playoff burned all your cushion, right? But you were still alive. 10 years of the 4-team format. No two-loss team ever made it. So you lose one, cushion's gone, but you could still get there. In the 12-team playoff, I think it remains to be seen how much love three-loss teams from power conferences get from the selection committee. We'll see how they treat that. Some years, I think some of them will get in, some years not. But for all practical purposes, Travis, the way I'm looking at it is now with a 12-team playoff, two losses burns your cushion. Right. But you're still alive if you run it from there. Three. Yeah, maybe you get in, but you lose three games. I don't care what conference you're in or what logo's on your helmet. You're playing with fire at that point.
Yeah, it used to be if you had one loss at the end of conference championship Saturday, you kind of had earned the right to bitch if you didn't get in. If you were from one of the Power Five leagues, if you were 12-1. Coming out of conference championship Saturday, maybe even 11-1 didn't even play in the conference championship game. You could have a beef from that perspective. Now it feels like it's going to be more if you're a two-loss team in that same type of pool of teams in those conferences and you don't get in, maybe you'll have a right to complain as well. There's always going to be complaining. We can go to 24, whatever we decide.
Yes, there will be
complaining, but it's still a huge Saturday. Again, anytime you get Alabama and Georgia together, it's going to have national championship game feel to it, not implications. It's going to feel like a national championship game. And by the way, we appreciate all the live viewers chiming in here, Chase, already in the show chat. Bob Rutherford, Chad Anderson, Little Joe C. Here you got Bama pointing out the possibility, Chase, these teams could play three times. Do we need three?
What world are we living in when they could match up three times? Get them in September, get them together again in early December, and why not? Maybe a little later in the winter, too.
Chad Anderson chiming in. These are the Saturdays we wait all summer for. Great slate of games. And it is. It's a really good Saturday. Even when you get beyond Alabama, Georgia, and they don't get bigger, Chad says, than Bama and UGA. Don't give a piss about nothing but the Tide. Chad's fired up. Late night, Chad. Chad after dark.
Ready to go.
How about that, Chase? The Chadnator getting after it. And by the way, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel right here, we would certainly appreciate you going ahead and doing that right now. Hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications. That way you get all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. We'd also appreciate a thumbs up. Hit that like button if you don't mind. That would help us out tremendously as well, Chase.
Travis, what about the revenge factor for Georgia, right? You got to think Alabama has been circled on that Georgia schedule by more Georgia fans than Alabama fans have circled the Georgia game, right? You think about what the heartbreaker was for Georgia last year. Hell, they were an inch away from a shot at a three-peat, which Nick Saban never even accomplished. Nope. And it was all torn asunder in one night over in Atlanta in the SEC title game. Not only knocked him out of the SEC championship, but also, of course, knocked him out of that college football playoff altogether. They took out their frustrations on the Seminoles in the Orange Bowl, but where they really, I think, want to take out their frustrations is this Saturday at Bryant Denny Stadium.
Yeah, and the old man's gone. I mean, the Bama boogeyman is going to be out on the Walk of Champions, you know, talking about it. He's not going to be inside the stadium on Saturday night, walking that sideline opposite Kirby Smart. So if not now, when, Kirby?
Right.
That's the question coming from that Georgia fan base. But don't think there's not pressure on Kalen DeBoer in this game, too. I mean, you look at the standard he inherited.
Yeah.
Now you lose even your first one to Georgia, that's substandard, because mostly all Alabama fans have known going back to 2008 and the infamous or famous blackout, either side, depending on which one you were on. This has been all Alabama, you know, in this series. So there's that to uphold. But, yeah, I mean, there's no pressure on either coach in terms of employment. This isn't a Sam Pittman or Billy Napier situation by any means. But, you know, that faction over there in Georgia, they want to see this stop. Everything has gone Georgia's way, right, over the last 4 or 5 years, except Alabama, and they're ready to put an end to that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a game that neither fan base will forget about, win or lose, and that sticks to both coaches. Like you said, you know, both coaches as safe as they could possibly be job security-wise, but that doesn't mean this game won't be remembered. Win or lose, both fan bases.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Alabama offense versus the Georgia defense. Travis, let's dig into that just a little bit. You got Malachi Starks roaming that secondary for the Bulldogs, one of the very best defensive backs in all of college football. You worry a little bit about Jalen Milroe throwing to the middle of the field with Starks roaming around for sure. I like C.J. Allen, the linebacker. I think he made like 5-6 starts for the Bulldogs as a freshman last year. He's leading them in tackles this year. A lot of guys on that defensive front seven for Georgia are back from last year. Not all of them, but it's mostly the same group. You got Nazir Stackhouse back, of course, on that defensive line, who infamously got plowed on that double team last year.
You talk about motivation to bounce back. Those big guys up front for Georgia from that SEC championship game, right?
No doubt. No doubt. What do you feel like Alabama's got to do offensively to score and win in this football game? Does it start with the running game? Is it more about Milroe getting over the top with Williams or what?
I think it starts with Milroe keeping his legs involved. I think you need every aspect of Jalen's game that he can bring to the table while also playing clean, keeping that turnover column clean. Think about the SEC championship game last year. Give Tommy Rees credit. He kind of saved that one design quarterback run for put away time there in the fourth quarter, and Jalen hit the explosive, and that effectively ended the game. I don't think it's going to take that long for Kalen DeBoer and Nick Sheridan to try to get Jalen going in this run game. And I think that's the great thing, too, about already putting all that on tape for Georgia to see. You're not just going to gang up on our backs. That's the advantage Alabama's going to have defensively, which we'll get to in a minute, in dealing with Carson Beck and the Georgia run game. What Alabama has shown you is that, hey, and whatever you thought about Kalen DeBoer in this offense, don't think that the quarterback will not be involved in the run game. And I think situational football is going to be huge because these teams are so evenly matched. So when I think about Jalen in the run game, I think about the red zone where Alabama has converted 9 of 11 opportunities so far this season for touchdowns. And that's going to be big too. And also kind of, if you just kind of tee up the run game for this Georgia defense, you're not going to have much success. But if you can give them something that can hold them, right, hold that backside defender off of Jam Miller and right. Justice Haynes, and putting that on tape against Wisconsin was great, right? If you chase this back, Jalen can read this thing now, or he's got the green light to pull it, and now he can hurt you on the perimeter. So I just think there's a lot more to defend with Jalen Milroe this time around than there was even last December.
So much more difficult to run the football against anyone, but especially Georgia, if you've got a pocket quarterback who can't move, right? I mean, if we were talking about a McCarron or a Coker or somebody like that taking snaps for Alabama, a lot harder to run the football when they don't have to worry about the quarterback pulling it. And Milroe could do that. He can hurt him. He's going to be able to freeze those defenders, hopefully, for Alabama. And you know, we'll see how that plays out. But, yeah, I agree with you completely. He's got to be involved in the run game, design runs especially. The explosive runs for Milroe tend to come on the improv from the pocket on a design pass play. But the non-explosive Milroe runs that just move the sticks for 6-8 yards right around the edge, those are huge. Can't replace those if he can give them.
Khalid checking in here, and he says he thinks C.J. Allen, the Georgia linebacker, will be spying Milroe and that the Dogs will match their best corner. He thinks they'll travel their best corner to Ryan Williams. We'll see. Kirby's not really known for traveling corners, right? Like Nick wasn't. Nick didn't travel Patrick Surtain to a best wide receiver. DK Metcalf or guys like that, AJ Brown, you really couldn't with those Ole Miss offenses because they had two of them. But it is interesting to think of the potential matchups in this game from that perspective. And I think if you're Alabama, you're okay, because last year it seemed like the spy technique was especially problematic for that Alabama offense. It seems like this year they've had some answers for that. And a lot of it starts up front. You know, if you're able to be productive and successful on early downs and keep Jalen out of those third and eights, you know, when you can kind of drop guys in coverage, maybe pressure him with 3 or 4 and have a spy or two, as we saw last year. Sometimes we'd see 2 spies on Jalen in those situations. So early down success, you don't have to gash Georgia, but if you can stay 2nd and 6, 2nd and 5, something in that. And Kentucky had some success running the football. Now, once Kentucky passed the 50-yard line, they didn't have much success at all. You know, Georgia, red zone defense, those type of things, very, very good. And another thing, Alabama with the explosive plays. We've seen that a good bit, 40-plus yard plays through 3 games. Georgia doesn't give up many of those either. I think Georgia's only given up 1 play of 30 yards or more through 3 games.
Yeah, for sure. The explosive play, I think Nick Sheridan on Monday was joking that the video he watched on explosives allowed by that Georgia defense was a real quick watch for him. I think, like you said, I think Antonio Williams for Clemson had a 36-yard catch in week 1 on Georgia. That was the one you're talking about. I want to say Tennessee Tech popped a 25-yard run on Georgia, but that was 3 minutes to go in a 48-3 game. So, explosive plays, hard to come by. It's a big part of Milroe's game is getting somebody loose on that deep ball. You'd like to think that it could be Ryan Williams. It doesn't have to be Ryan Williams necessarily. They can get other guys deep. Ryan Williams looks like the guy they want to hit deep. But they could do it. You know, Kobe Prentice can get loose on you.
And Jeremy Bernard hit the corner against Wisconsin. Now, that's Wisconsin, I understand. Right. But I look at Georgia defensively and I think of the dogs kind of like Alabama, like the safeties in that back end with Malachi Starks, especially. I think that's where it's especially problematic. I do think you can still get some stuff done on the perimeter against Georgia. And as we're going to talk about with the Alabama defense coming up here, I think that's where Georgia offensively is going to look too. So perimeter defense both ways, I think, is going to be big, not just in terms of deep balls and shot plays, which is what people typically associate that with. I think both these teams, and especially Georgia, probably more so Georgia, because I still don't think Alabama is especially adept in the quick game to the perimeter. But Beck will work the edges early to try to see if these corners that have rotated so heavily can get off some blocks, because Georgia will block your ass on the perimeter. So you better bring your lunch pail if you're Jackson, or how's it going to go at the other corner this week too? I think that's a storyline we're going to get into maybe in just a little bit as well.
Yeah, good timing to flip it over and talk about that Alabama defense going against the Georgia offense. Couple thoughts on it. Obviously, that 13-12 score against Kentucky was a bit of a head-scratcher for sure. Georgia's offense did not have a good night. But you know what, Travis? If you go back and look at these last 3 years or so where Kirby Smart's teams have been so dominant, they'll have that sleeper game in September, and you'll think, maybe they're not what we thought they were. And then they'll turn around the next week and beat a good football team by a whole lot of points. So yeah. I don't at all believe, I don't know that 13-12 Kentucky score was anything for Georgia to worry. I think it might be more for Alabama. That's exactly right.
Alabama had South Florida, and what did it do the next week? Went on the road and just took apart Wisconsin.
No doubt.
And again, that's not Russell Wilson, Wisconsin. That's not even Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin. I get it. But still, it was a very impressive performance on the heels of a very, very lackluster performance against the Bulls.
Trevor Etienne having a big year for Georgia. Of course, he sat out that opener against Clemson, but he's been averaging 6.5 yards per carry, I think, since getting into the lineup. Nate Frazier, the backup too, Travis. Big
That's
time
the guy
recruit.
I like.
Yeah. It's a typical Georgia 1-2 punch with those two guys. One of them out of the portal, but who cares where they come from? Georgia's loaded in the backfield. No surprise there. They're always pretty much loaded in the backfield. Carson Beck, I don't know that he's got the explosive options on the outside that he's had the last couple of years. I think that's part of why you'll see him try to do some things in the quick game. But Oscar Delp, I thought Oscar Delp was going to be a little bit more involved in this Georgia offense as a tight end. He's only caught 3 balls all year, Travis.
I think Oscar Delp is a really good tight end, but Brock Bowers wasn't really a tight end, right?
Right.
That's what you're seeing here.
Wide receiver and a tight end body.
He was a freaking droid, man. Yeah. I mean, they would hand the ball to Brock Bowers, let alone flip it to him. They'd line him up out wide. They'd throw tunnel screens to this guy. Yeah. Like he was a 6'1", 185-pound burner like Jerry Jeudy or something. He was just a freak. And so, I mean, it's not a knock on Delp or the other tight ends. These are mere mortals, right? And also Ladd McConkey, as an outside guy, as a true speed guy, an explosive playmaker. I don't see that as much yet with this Georgia offense. I know a lot of Georgia fans keep reverting back to Mike Bobo. He catches a lot of the blowback as the offensive coordinator. But it was a lot easier to draw it up with a couple of the guys you had last year. Going back to running backs, I love Nate Frazier. First time I saw this guy against Clemson, I said, that looks like Josh Jacobs to me. That's what that guy looks like. Trevor Etienne, to me, is kind of like his big brother, Travis. He can be a little bit boom or bust in terms of he can go 80. Don't get me wrong. He can go 70, 80 yards. But he can take a couple of zeros and ones and maybe a minus one before he hits it. Guy like Frazier, it always worries me more, because over the course of a game, as you continue to perhaps get worn down on defense, that guy doesn't get easier as the game goes on. So that'll be a fascinating dynamic. The backs for both these teams, man, going to be a big part of it. Not just running it either. I still think, you know, both these teams are going to look to throw it to these backs a little bit too.
Alabama's run defense has been an area of concern for Kane Womack. He mentioned that a couple times here over the last week. I think they gave up maybe roughly 150 yards on the ground to Wisconsin. Not terrible, but not what you want either, for sure. And Georgia can run the heck out of the football. Now, Georgia is down a big-time offensive guard, Tate Ratledge, out with an injury. I think he's getting that tightrope procedure. I think he's already had that tightrope procedure that they do for high ankle sprains. He won't be involved in this game. Not sure when he's coming back. That's a blow to that Georgia offensive line, but at least to this point, it doesn't look like it's mattered. They can grind it on the ground, and Alabama's run defense is going to have to be more stout than we've seen it yet.
Yeah, I keep hearing or seeing talk about got to get pressure on Beck. If you're not better against the run than you were against South Florida and even Wisconsin, it's going to be hard to get pressure on Carson Beck, because Georgia's going to be on schedule in terms of what they really want to do. And for me, that goes back again. I think Alabama has the personnel to hang in against this Georgia run game. I really do. When I look at just the pieces, I'm intrigued conceptually by what exactly Kane Womack is doing with his approach to this point. Now, maybe against Georgia this week, that'll look different. But, you know, kind of playing this 3-3 with the wolf lining up in gaps and things like that at the snap with a
yeah. What about the wolf position? It's not the jack.
It hasn't been. Now maybe Saturday night that wolf's going to be up there as like a hybrid, and Quay Rousseau, I think he's important for this game because he can be that physical presence in the run game that you're going to need first and foremost this week. But I'm just interested to see conceptually. Because you knew what Nick was going to do against Georgia. I mean, in that run game, he understood it's a fist fight first and foremost. You're not reinventing the wheel in a lot of ways. It's like the Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other. I mean, it's like an inside drill on a Tuesday at your own practice when you used to get Nick and Kirby's offenses running against each other. So there's some mystery there, I think, with this approach that we've seen from Kane Womack and how that's exactly going to play out. I'm not knocking it. I'm just fascinated. I'm interested to see how it kind of works on Saturday night.
Special teams, Travis, an area that Alabama can expect to have an advantage in just about every game it plays, maybe not necessarily this game, because that Georgia kicking game is phenomenal as well. Peyton Woodring, the Bulldogs kicker, perfect on the season so far. 6 out of 6 on field goals. He's got a 55-yarder under his belt, so obviously nothing wrong with his range. And Brett Thorson, the punter, has been bombing it. I think he's averaging 49-plus on punts, and so that's an area where, by the way, I was looking at the special teams numbers for Georgia. Hadn't even had a kickoff return this year, which tells you two things, right? One, tells you something about the prevalence of touchbacks in college football in general. Also tells you something about the defense they've been playing.
Yeah, it does. And also, it's not going to be a great night to be a punt returner, because neither one of these punters have many punts returned. You saw it with James Burnett last time out at Wisconsin. I mean, he was just mortar shots.
Yeah,
time and time again up there in Madison, and Georgia's capable of doing the same thing. So return yards are going to be at a premium on special teams, but it could very well come down to a big kick. And Woodring, still a young guy, having a very successful season at this point. I mean, Georgia kickers, you go back to like Kevin Butler, Georgia's always got a damn kicker, man. Yeah. And it used to be they were all from like Stone Mountain. You know, they'd run that mountain to get their legs strong or something. But, you know, it brings Graham Nicholson into the equation potentially. You know, his only field goal attempt came a couple Saturdays ago against Wisconsin. He missed it wide right. Looked like a good strike. Everything looked good on it. Just stayed out right on him. He's a Lou Groza Award winner. But you know what? none of those came on the stage a year ago at Miami of Ohio. Like, they might come on Saturday night.
Tuscaloosa. That's right. Injury situation, we mentioned Tate Ratledge is out. Michael Williams, the outstanding pass rusher for the Bulldogs, looks like he's questionable. That official injury report from the SEC will be out tomorrow, the initial one anyway. We've never seen an Alabama injury report officially. Travis, we're going to get one this week. Finally, an SEC game for the Crimson Tide. Sounds like Michael Williams is on his way back, but maybe not quite there, at least if you try to read between the lines from Kirby Smart.
Yep.
And, you know, Kalen DeBoer's been pretty close-lipped about Quay Rousseau. I asked him about Rousseau on Monday, and he didn't provide too much of an answer. He said he felt like things are looking up for Rousseau or something around along those lines, but he certainly wasn't saying he was ready to go. He said Malachi Moore's ready to go. Yeah. Who, of course, sustained that head injury against Wisconsin. He practiced last week. Rousseau is progressing, but like you said, it's important for him to get back out there as fast as possible. He's a big part of that defense.
Especially on early downs this week, man. You know, Q is a vet, so you like that about him. It's not going to figuratively be too big for him, but he is still probably best suited for pass rush situations.
Right.
You know, he's worked his tail off to physically get to a point where he can compete in the run game with his body type. And so it could fall to him. Maybe it's Keanu Coote that gets more of that. Again, I'm just fascinated in general to see how Alabama goes about this with Kane Womack. In taking care of that part first, because if you don't take care of that, it's going to be tough. If you give up 200 plus on the ground Saturday night, you know, that's probably going to be a tough situation to overcome. Our guy Tex Titer chiming in here. Thanks, Tex. We appreciate it. The thumbs up signal. Thank you, Tex. Where you been? You're late. Hope you got a note.
And, you know, also too, Travis, really quickly on that subject, all the more important to stop the run if you're Kane Womack in the Alabama defense, because you might not get to Carson Beck. He's only been sacked one time all year. He was arguably the most well-protected quarterback in college football last year. It is hard to get to that guy, and I don't care who, not to say Alabama can. Alabama's got some good pass rushers. They got to Beck a little bit last December for sure.
He made a huge mistake deep on his own end last year.
He did. He did. But they know what they're doing in pass pro over there.
They
now
do. Oh, well, look at the NFL draft, you know, kind of like Alabama for more on that. And he's not a Redwood back there. I know we've kind of talked about this situation with Jalen and the dynamic ability and the accountability that he demands from defenses because of the potential for him to rip you in the run game. You know, I don't think Carson Beck's going to be that guy Saturday night, but they're going to run some zone read. And if he likes the look, he can keep it, you know, I mean, for 9-10 yards. I mean, even Tyler Van Dyke did that once before his knee injury against Alabama a couple Saturdays ago, and he's anything but a blazer. So I think Beck can hurt you with his legs in some ways that aren't exactly eye-popping in the box score, right? He can avoid pressure. He can navigate a pocket. He can get up, find the clean grass to get the ball out, some of those things. So, you know, that's going to be something to keep an eye on with him. Good athlete. I mean, he's a good athlete relative to the position.
From our old stomping grounds, right? Bartram Trail High School down in St. Johns County, not far from you and I, where you and I grew up. So
he's a Mandarin guy, actually. Went to Mandarin.
I thought he went to Bartram Trail. He went to Mandarin?
He's a Mandarin guy. Huh. And he won a state championship at Mandarin with Derrick Henry's old coach from Yulee, Bobby. I'm sorry, coach.
Yeah. Last name. Is it Raymond, maybe?
It's like that.
Yeah.
They won a state title together at Mandarin. That's kind of Mac Jones territory out that way too, if you're ever in Southern Duval, you know.
Quick word on the Vegas man and the ticket man, Travis. The spread, Georgia -2. It's the first time Alabama's been a home dog since the LSU game of 07. 90 straight home games they've been favored until this one. The Dogs lay in 2.5 early in the week. I think most sports books have got it at 2 right now. The over-under sitting at 49.5. Thoughts at all on either of those?
You know, it looks tempting for Alabama to be a home dog, right? For the first time since Nick Saban's, I guess, first season.
Yeah.
In Tuscaloosa, that LSU game, which you go back and look at that line, and I was down on the field. I did some down on the field stuff for that game, and seeing the talent disparity between what Saban had largely built at LSU and what he was working with in that first year. I give those first year guys a lot of credit because just in terms of measurables and those things, they really didn't need to be on the field. That was a hell of a game, man.
Yeah. Alabama had a shot, man.
I kind of like out. I mean, if you're going to give me Alabama and some points,
yeah,
you know, on their home field in a game like this, and you got to be careful. You don't want to get tricked into, well, Georgia didn't look good against Kentucky, because we said you can go look at Alabama against South Florida on its home field.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that road game at Kentucky will help Georgia for what it's going to need to do this week on the road in some ways. So, but I mean, if you're going to give me Alabama some points at home, I'm probably going to have to take those.
Yeah, I definitely would not lay the points. Not sure I'd take them either, but if I was going to go one side or the other, I think I'd rather take them with Alabama playing at home. The tickets, Travis, the get-in price for the cheap ones online right now running about $250, which is about as high as it gets. Obviously, that falls as you get closer to game time, tends to fall quite a bit the later you wait, but $250 as of midweek. Average price among all tickets available online, about $500. It's a hot ticket. The ticket man's been waiting for this one. He's going to cash in.
Oh, because look at the rest of the schedule. Tuscaloosa ticket man better get it this weekend, dude.
That's right.
Because Auburn ain't exactly coming in 11-0, as we know, for the Imbo.
No.
Imbo ain't going to be for a spot in Atlanta. So you'll still do okay on the Iron Bowl regardless. But, yeah, I mean, Alabama goes to Tennessee, goes to LSU, goes to Norman, I guess Mizzou maybe.
That's not going to be that hot of ticket.
South Carolina showing some signs of life maybe. I mean, Ticket Man, he's got a lot riding on this week.
The Tuscaloosa Ticket Man is rooting for Missouri, right? Because he wants them to get it. He wants Mizzou to come in unbeaten. And then he's got a better backup behind this Georgia game.
Well, right? When Mizzou was in overtime with Vanderbilt at home last Saturday, the Ticket Man he was in his 74th floor penthouse with the window open. The Tuscaloosa Ticket Man. Because he was ready to jump if Mizzou loses to Vandy at home. That would have hurt the ticket man.
OT they went. OT.
Yeah. Diego Favia. That's my guy, man.
No doubt.
I'm not saying he's gonna have a great game against Alabama. I'm just telling you he ain't gonna be afraid. That's all I'm gonna tell you. He might throw three picks. He might throw three touchdown passes. I doubt it.
But fears Diego, no man, that guy.
No, he fears no man.
Bouncing around the SEC really quick before we close things out, Travis, OU at the aforementioned Auburn Tigers. Hugh Freeze kind of stepped in it with some of his comments this week. He loses lost to Arkansas at home, but he would have beaten them nine. If they line up 10 times, Travis, he'd beat them nine. But no offense to Sam Pittman. I love Sam, but we beat him 9 out of 10. How do you not take offense to that?
Hugh Freeze has become the Uncle Rico of college football coaching. If I just would have had another chance, I swear I would have beat Nick 4 times. He knows it. Nick knows it. Yeah, he's become Uncle Rico of coaching. How cringy is that, too, if you're an Auburn fan right now?
It's the worst.
You don't want to hear all that crap.
No.
And especially after the blowback you incurred for bringing this guy in to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had to put up with so much crap from everybody about bringing this guy in.
Right.
And now 2 years in, he's talking about what could have been against Nick Saban. I understand things are asked in a way. Context matters. I understand that. But even with context provided, It's dumb. It's senseless. And, you know, good for Sam Pittman. Yeah. You know, Sam standing on business. Kind of like Eli Drinkwitz after beating Tennessee last year.
Not very self-aware, that Hugh Freeze, for sure. Arkansas at Texas A&M. That's an old school rivalry right there, Travis. Usually a kind of a barn burner. Kentucky at Ole Miss. Mississippi State at Texas. Could there possibly be a worse mismatch than a Mississippi State team with its starting quarterback out for the year with a blown out knee, I think, going on the road to
True freshman start.
Talk about being able to name the number.
Yeah, it you know, that's become a storyline in the league too, really. I mean, look at all the quarterback changes after two or three games, some due to ineffective play. But then, like, you know, Oklahoma, Auburn, but then you've had some injuries. South Carolina's had an injury at quarterback. Blake Shapen now out for the rest of the year for Jeff Lebby. And as tough as it's been for the Mississippi State offense, that defense is
bad,
atrocious. Yeah. I mean, it is. Joey Dunn's spinning in his grave, you know.
I learned that the hard way this week. The damn official wreck is going down the tubes in September on me, Travis. I had Mississippi State, Florida under 58.5. Felt pretty good about it with that Florida offense being shaky and whatnot. What do? They go out and bring up 70 some points or whatever it was. Didn't even come close to coming in.
No, it's, you know, it's fascinating looking around the league right now. I mean, Jackson Arnold's out as the quarterback at Oklahoma.
What about that?
Five-star.
Yeah.
So that Auburn-Oklahoma game is, you're going to watch it just kind of like how you go by a wreck and you can't help but look. You know, I mean, I'll say this. If there's one consistent area with either of those teams for that game, it's Oklahoma's defense. So, I mean, I could see a situation where you think it's bad offensively for Auburn right now, but a pissed off Oklahoma team coming to town.
Yeah.
Knowing it needs to maybe protect this first time starter at quarterback. Although I thought he looked good in the second half against Tennessee.
Hawkins.
Yeah. Michael Hawkins. They're going to play to their strength. Brent Venables is going to do that anyway as a defensive guy. It could be rough. It's not rock bottom, I don't think, yet for Auburn offensively. I think Hugh thinks it is, but maybe that's why he's saying what he's saying, because he even knows this isn't even rock bottom.
That game just smells like an Auburn rebound to me. We'll see. But I
just think Oklahoma is better across the board, but the game's at Jordan-Hare. And one of the things I said back in the preseason on this channel was it wasn't all that unrealistic to think that Oklahoma in its first SEC season could get off to an 0-3 start, because it had Tennessee to open. Then the road trip to Auburn. You know who OU's third game is in SEC play? Texas. So you talk about backs to the wall for OU right now. You better win this one, because you are looking at 0-3 if you don't.
Yep. Kentucky got anything for Lane Kiffin in Oxford or no?
Gritty, gutty, you know.
I have Youngs to run it.
Youngstown-y. Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to be a situation where Kentucky is able to control things and get the kind of game. It's tortoise and hare. Lane's going to try to speed that thing up, and Mark Stoops going to try to keep that at a school zone speed, you know. Lane wants Autobahn, and so that's going to be the key to the drill there, I think.
The Wildcats want to keep those Ole Miss receivers off that basketball goal, right? Get them off of that basketball goal. Sits in Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Yes. That's the silliest thing I've ever seen. All right, Travis, that is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Everybody go subscribe to that right away. Looking forward, of course, to the Sunday Nighter coming up this weekend. Travis and I will recap Alabama's big game against the Georgia Bulldogs. Until then, we're going to sign off. So for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, and we will catch you next time right here on Talkin' Tide.